I'd love to hear from one or two of you. I asked you to share at lunchtime, first of all, with somebody who shared three things that they got out of this morning that they wanted to, that they shared with somebody at lunch. Anybody? Did anybody do that? No? Okay, so who wants to share one thing? What's that? Relatedness. That being in connection and community and communicating. Is that right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Who else? Who else has something?
We have to create a revolution.
Absolutely. Thank you. And can we get these moved out of the way for me not to trip over while I'm walking around? Thank you very much. Okay. And here's what I'd love you to do when you're going to share. Stand up, say your name, and then share.
Okay.
So we get to know everybody.
My name is Deborah Allman, and I just got this great reminder that we can change our career at any point in our lives.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I love that. A lot of people do. We have four people, or maybe five, in our NEPT program who are over 70. We also have some, right? There you go. Who's in the room that's over 70? That's in our program. And then we also have some millennials as well. So we have both ends of the spectrum. Who had something over here? Sorry. Okay. Stand up, say your name, and then, yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sunny. One of the things that Ocean reminded me of was your sense of community. Like, you don't have to save the world. You know, you can be responsible for yourself and do your part as a member of the community. So
right.
That was good because it took the pressure off of building your business and all that stuff. It's like, that's right. I have my little gift that I can give to the world, and
exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. And I loved when he said that there are some who are meant to, you know, go out like he is and his father and the millions, right? And then there's some that are, you know, this is your community. And we all make a difference. Every single one of us makes a difference. We don't have to have a 500,000 person mailing list. We don't have to have a huge, you know, industry business that's reaching millions and millions of people. Okay, one more over here.
Oops, sorry.
There you go.
Pat Murphy. And I really liked that he said that the activists and the big food companies talked to each other for 2 years as opposed to throwing stones at each other.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And they
yeah.
came to... And
right. And that's the way we do it. You know, what do they say? You can attract more bees with honey than with lemons, or I don't know what this phrase is, something like that. With what?
Venom.
Vinegar, yeah. So we don't want to push people away, right? We want to pull them in. And I know for a lot of us, because our families are so important to us, because we love these people, we just can get kind of not so nice about, you know, yelling at them for their food choices because we're worried about them. And it comes from a place of love, but that's not how they're hearing it, and it's not empowering to them to be able to, you know, get, you better do that. You better do that. It's the right thing to do, right? And how do you feel? You go, I always said, I don't care if you tell me I have to do something, even if it's what I want to do, because I'm a rebel, I'm going to not do it. Who's like that?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Okay. Absolutely. So which way do I go? Okay. So we're going to do something a little fun right now, and then we're going to get into some geeky stuff. So I try to do is keep it light, connection, and then let's go into the brainy stuff. Because if we just do the brainy stuff all weekend long, we feel drained and overwhelmed when we go home. And if we intersperse, we feel connected, and then we have ways to integrate it. Because I've gone to several, you know, CEU credit things where it's like, you're just full at the end, and you can't even take any more, but you have to sit there, and it's good stuff, but there's no time to integrate. So I want to integrate. So one of the things that I wanted to share was the concept of movement, right? We got to keep moving. We have movements. We have activism. Somebody said, I want to create a movement, right? But there's movement in everything, right? There's movement in our bodies. Our circulation system is moving. If it stops, it stagnates, we have a heart attack or a stroke. If the digestive tract is movement, if it stops, we get constipated, we get sick, right? in the world, you know, if rivers stop moving because there's a dam put there and it's not set in the right place, it backs up, or if there's a flood or there's something, you know, an earthquake comes down and blocks the movement of water. We need movement, right? We need movement. And a lot of times when we're speaking, especially when we introduce ourselves, we speak in nouns and adjectives. I'm a health coach. I am a doctor. I am Rita Marie. I am, and then it's a noun. Or I am a brilliant health coach. I am an amazing actress. But then we're just flowering it. What is the part of the English language that is related to movement? Verb, right, a verb. Remember that from grade school when we were first learning stuff, right? So the verb is what is the doing, the movement. And so what I'd like for all of us to get is the ability to present ourselves with our verb. Like, I think everybody has a verb that describes who you are. And I'm going to show you a few slides just to give you an idea of some people that you know, some famous people, and what their verb might be based on what they do. And then we're going to give you the opportunity to figure out what your verb is. I have a list of over 100 verbs on a page if you need them for inspiration. We're going to give you some time to sit there with, what is my verb? And the saying would be, I X because I am. I act because I am. I think because I am, right? So it's the way that we can express who we are and introduce ourselves to people in the room from that verb level. And it's a deep level, right? Because when I say, I'm Allie and I'm a doc from the UK, that's one thing. But when you're not seeing into her soul when she says that. But if she comes up with that verb, that action, that really is who she is, you're seeing into her soul. And it's a way for us to get to know each other. So we're going to do an activity, but I want to show you. And I want to show you the ultimate act of movement and what happens, like, the first time that we won. Do you remember the first time you won a race, right? Your dad released you, your mom accepted you. But there were like a billion others competing for that egg, right? One egg and a billion sperm, and you won. You won the ovarian lottery, right? You won. Like, who's won a lottery since? Who's won a lottery that was that important since, right? So you won. We have inside the ability to win. We already know that because those other 999, whatever number, millions, didn't win. They never became a person. Think about that. I never, you know, when you think about that, all those other sperm, they never became a person, but you did. So you won. So I won that day 64 years ago, probably, when I was first released. Oops, why? I went the wrong way. No, I'm 60. What happened? It's not going in the right direction. Oh, that's on the same page? No. What happened? It's not going to the same page. My slides got out of order. Okay. And that was me. So these slides got in the wrong order. I started out as a sperm and a little egg, and that was me. And that was me very young, right? I was always thinking, like, that was one of my infant pictures. So what is it that describes what you've been doing? And I will tell you, yeah, so it should have been the other order. So before we do that, these are all out of order. That one was supposed to be before the other two. What happened? Okay, well, flexible. What word we use this morning? Neuroplasticity. Yes, I'm very able to shift. So I want to teach you about heart math. And who of you does not know what heart math is? Okay, so the rest of you do. So I'll just go a little slowly, I'll explain it, and then I want everybody to just do it. It's a great transition throughout your day. It's a great thing to do when you're starting to feel stressed because you have a deadline and blah, 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 and you stop and you can do it in 30 seconds to 3 minutes and shift the whole physiology. We'll talk more about that physiology tomorrow during the vagus nerve talk in the morning, but I'm just gonna share with you how to do this. Is that okay? Okay, so what I want you to do is just sit in your chair. and make a connection with your heart. Just take everything off your lap for a minute. And I like, personally, to put one hand over my heart and the other hand over my belly, because we're going to focus on heart connection and breathing, deep abdominal breathing, so you can feel your belly rising. And when you do, you push your belly out as you breathe in and pull it in as you breathe out. Yeah, out, right. So I want you to close your eyes. It feels more comfortable. And then just take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Longer on the exhale than on the inhale, because when you exhale, you put yourself into parasympathetic dominance, which is healing, rest, digest. So it could be 5 seconds in and 10 seconds out. 5 seconds in and 10 seconds out. And just focus on your heart. Focus on that feeling. Focus on your breath. And then think about some place where you felt joyful, some place where you can go or where you fantasize about going, where you feel happy, joyful, at peace. And then picture being in that place in full living color. Hear what sounds there are to hear. Smell what smells there are. Taste whatever there is to taste, and just allow your skin to feel the sensation. Personally, I go to the beach, and I hear the sounds of the waves and the seagulls and the children playing, and I smell the salt air, and I feel the sun on my skin and the water on my skin. And just pretend you're there, because you can fake your nervous system out. We'll talk more about the physiology of that tomorrow. You can fake your nervous system out, thinking you're really there. Isn't that cool? Like you're really there. And then just allow yourself to be there and go to a place of appreciation, gratitude for that experience, that future experience, that place of beauty and wonder in your life. And when you're ready, you can open up your eyes. Come back. Does anybody feel different than you did before you went out? Anybody? Yeah? You can shift your state anytime you want throughout your day, whenever things get stressful. And you don't even have to close your eyes and do this. You can just do it internally. I do it a lot when my technology fails, when I'm on a webinar and suddenly, did everybody notice me? Oh, we're having a problem. Because my body, I've done it enough that I've reprogrammed my nervous system most of the time, not all the time, to feel the stress, breathe it away. You know, it's not fake it till you make it either. It's really shifting from sympathetic to parasympathetic, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. Okay? So, promise me you'll do that, like, you try to remember to do that before each meal. Who can try to do that before? Because what it does is we digest our food better in parasympathetic state than sympathetic, okay? And you'll learn more about that when we talk polyvagal theory tomorrow. All right. So these are completely out of order. What happened to my slides? I'm going backwards? What? I'm going backwards? Oh. Okay, so we're going to do this verb thing, right? So nothing happens until something moves, right? And that's what we want to do. Abraham Lincoln, right? Famous speech, the Gettysburg Address, somebody did an analysis of it. There were like, it was like very small percentage of adjectives and a large percentage of verbs. I don't remember the exact amounts. Same thing in the Winston Churchill, his famous speech. And these are fantastic. They something that empowers people, that inspires people to take action. It's like, it's really like good marketing copy, right? He's like, oh yeah, I'm on board. Ocean with his message, right? He didn't use a lot. He used a lot of verbs, if you notice. So the Ten Commandments, they're all verbs, right? Thou shalt, thou shalt, thou shalt, thou. It's all verbs. So verbs are the commonality. There was a book by, what's his name? Buckminster Fuller. I tried to look for it. Somebody told me about this book. It was like $144 used on Amazon. I'm like, wow, somebody must really like that book. So there's a lot of folks, right? I think therefore I am. Oh, it's the therefore, right? I think therefore I am. I can't even read. Oh, there we go. I test, therefore I am. I ask, therefore I am, Socrates. So does this make sense with these people, right? And then this is Albert Einstein. I solve, therefore I am. And who is this? This is Montessori. I teach, therefore I am. And this is Thomas Edison. I invent, therefore I am. Mother Teresa. I care, therefore I am. And then Hemingway, I write, therefore I am. And I can't read it. Why am I? Oh, Amelia Earhart. I should be wearing my glasses, but I'm not. I fly, therefore I am. I innovate, therefore I am. Steve Jobs. I provoke, therefore I am. Joan Rivers. Right? I liberate, therefore I am, Martin Luther King. I design, therefore I am, Frank Lloyd Wright. I conquer, therefore I am, Napoleon Bonaparte. I risk, therefore I am, Nelson Mandela. I paint, therefore I am, Pablo Picasso. I protect, therefore I am, Gandhi, right? I invest, therefore I am. I empower, therefore I am, right? Oprah, she's always empowering people. I dream, therefore I am, Walt Disney. I win, therefore I am, Mark Spitz. Phelps, whatever. Sorry about that. And I expand, therefore I am, the universe. So all of these are verbs. So what's your verb? What can you say, I what, therefore I am? What is it that you exemplify in your personal life, in your professional life, in your life, that you, what verb describes who you are? So what we're going to do is we're going to ask each other, we're going to first do it on paper, and then we're going to go around and share it with each other. So ask yourself, what's my verb, right? What is it that I do in all my situations? I empower. I thought about inspire, but I do it more than inspire. I give people the tools they need to take action. So I think mine is empower. And there's, you may have multiple verbs, but not today. Today you're going to have one verb, okay? So you're going to figure it out. Why is it your verb? Think about it yourself. Why is it your verb? And I could think about why, because you're going to explain this to a couple of people as we walk around the room. And then how do you live it? Like, how does your life show that verb, okay? So what is your verb? Why is it your verb, and how do you live it? And here's a list of verbs if you need help. Okay? But you may already have a sense of it based on listening to what these other folks' verbs are. So what's your verb? I want you to take out a piece of paper and just jot down the answers to those three questions. Oops. What is your verb? Why is it your verb? And how do you live it? There you go. So I'll give you a minute. Can we time for a minute? Just really feel into it. Don't make it about your head, make it about your heart. Like, who are you? And those of you on live stream, you do it too. And we'll give you the opportunity to write into the chat. And then some of our people back here will read them when we do the sharing, okay? So participate. Stay engaged. So when you're done, I want you to write your verb on your name badge. So you can do it right above your name at the bottom. You can do it right across the top. And ideally, if you have a marker, so it's easy for people to read when they come up to you. If you don't have a marker, we have a bunch in the back. So we're going to do an exercise where you're going to write your name down. You can go back there and get it. And then you're going to just mingle around the room and meet as many people as you can. And you're going to go up to them and say, hi, I invest. I'm Lynn, and I inspire, therefore I am. And you go to the next person, and the next person, and the next person. Okay? But before we do that, I'm going to have two shares, because I want to hear a couple, but I want to hear all three things. What's your verb? Why is it your verb? And how do you live it? So who wants to share? Raise your hand if you want to share. Okay, we have a couple over here. Okay, I'm passing you, so I will give you that, and I'll go back there. Okay, my name is, and?
My name is Susie, and mine is I learn for there I am, because I'm always taking classes.
Beautiful. And how you live it is you're always taking classes. Awesome. Okay, raise your hand back here. Somebody had their hand up. Okay, just quick.
I'm Lori. I transform, and I embody what I teach.
Awesome. Did you have yours?
I'm Nancy. I teach, and everywhere I go, if there's someone that wants to learn something, why, I have something to teach them.
Awesome. Who else? You with you?
Hi, my name is Mona, and I love because it's very important to love, and I feel like when I share what I know, that is love, because then you're helping people to learn to love themselves.
I love that. Love that. Beautiful. You had your hands up, too.
I'm Marilyn, and I gather. So I gather information. I gather groups together to share it with.
Awesome. Do you gather food, too? Do you garden? I was thinking you garden when you said that. Okay. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Is there anybody else with this burning to share?
Hi, I'm Martha. I make, therefore I am. I like to make things happen, make things change, make disruption for the good of all others that bring no harm.
Beautiful. How did it feel to come up with your verb? Did anybody find it really hard, or did you find it like, oh, yeah, that's who I am? Yeah? Okay, we're going to do 3 minutes. Guys, put on a three-minute timer and get up out of your chairs. You can sit if you want to because you hurt. But get up out of your chairs and mingle around and meet as many people as you can in 3 minutes, just stating, hi, I'm Allie, I blank before I am, therefore I am. I was going to ask a question, and the question was, do you like getting up and moving around? And the fact that I can't get you back in your seats says to me, I think the answer is yes, right? And you like connecting and moving. So did everybody write their verb on their card? Did everybody write their verb on their card? Yes? Okay, good. So as you connect with people throughout the rest of the weekend, you'll see their verb on their card, and you can connect with them about their verb. Now, what you might do is find someone who has the same verb as you. Did anybody find anybody with the same verb today? Okay, what was it? Encourage. Okay, we had a couple of encourages.
Empower.
That I'm not surprised at. That's like a biggie in health coaching and practitioner. Who else had what? Who else found somebody else with their word? Care. Care. Yeah. These words are so not surprising in a room like this, right? So what about on live stream? What are some of the verbs from live stream? I love. Yeah.
I educate.
I educate.
I shift.
I shift. These are all like these are perfect words for this group,
I
right?
I smile.
I smile. I like that.
I teach.
I teach. Yeah. You know, the true meaning of doctor is teacher, right? You'd never know that from the way our medical system has become. You go in and you get proceduralized or you get, you know, prescriptionized, but very rarely do you get taught except in practices more like ours. So that's what we are. We're teachers. And part of teaching is not just teaching. It's inspiring and empowering. And so if I were to have three verbs, I would say teach, inspire, empower are my top three, right? Would anybody agree with that? Yeah? Okay. It's exciting, isn't it? Okay, so we're going to move a lot between head and heart. Head and heart, head and heart. Head and heart and hands, well, that's when we're doing like a massage therapy class where we can put hands on each other and do that. But we're going to focus between head and heart so we have that combination. And the connection is so important. So before I get into more of the meat of, you know, the content, which is going to be from now on, and we will still have breaks to do this kind of stuff, but I want to get into some of the content, the deeper content. But this is something I would encourage you all to copy whenever you're talking to people. Have it as a disclaimer before you start working with people, but also if you're teaching. It's like, this is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified medical professional, unless you are a medical professional, in which case it's fine. But this is meant to be education, and I'm educating you to identify the imbalances that are going on in your body so that you can make better choices to bring your body into balance. And when you're teaching, especially, and if you're on any medications, always say this, even if you don't believe it. Sometimes I believe it and sometimes I don't. Depends on what medications they're on. But if you're on any medications, make sure that you consult with your doctor before making any diet or lifestyle changes. Because the truth of the matter is when you start to do some of this stuff with blood sugar and blood pressure, you will see massive drops really quickly. And if you don't warn them to work with their doctor, they may faint from having low blood pressure, pass out. They may go into a diabetic coma if they're on insulin or metformin and the blood sugar goes too low. So those are things you really do need to warn people about, is make sure that you know their doctor's aware if they're on any medication. So I want to go deeper with the five steps that we talked about before, and I want to take it to a level of what are the specific things in our training and things that we can do within the five steps. So who remembers what those five steps are? Shout out one and I'll repeat it. Assess. Great. What's next? Connect. Plan. Remove the obstacles. Retest. Awesome. Reassess. So when we saw Ocean, where would you see what he teaches falling into that setup? Plan, right? He's out there. He's an activist. He's out there. Okay, this is what needs to get done. He certainly assessed the situation, but then his power is out there in doing something about it, creating the plan and then activating the plan, so taking action. Absolutely. So we're going to talk a little bit about assessment that I think is so overlooked today, which is blood sugar. If you go up to somebody and say, hey, I help people balance their blood sugar, what do they, if they're not diabetic, what do they say to you? Oh, yeah, my mother is diabetic. Maybe you should talk to her, right? No, I'm not diabetic. But the truth of the matter is that diabetes shows up 30 years before it shows up, right? The changes, and that's the sad part. The metabolic changes that affect the eyes and the peripheral nerves and the kidneys and the blood vessels, they do show up if you know how to look for it. And I want you guys to be able to help people to identify these things decades before they lose their vision. And we have a guy in one of our programs who, he had slightly high blood sugar fasting that the medical thinks is fine. It was like 95, 98, right, below 100. And nobody ever thought anything of it. And he was starting to get some peripheral neuropathies. And he started reading and he said to his doctor, could that be related to diabetes or blood sugar imbalance? He's, oh, no, you don't have diabetes. Oh, no, you don't have diabetes. So then he heard about a test called the hemoglobin A1C that they were doing at a health fair. And he did the test. And it came back that he had a hemoglobin A1C of 10. Okay, who knows what the ranges are, right? We should be 5. Right? So he had a hemoglobin A1C of 10, but his fasting glucose was still in the 90s. So he fell through the system. He already had the peripheral neuropathies, and then he shifted his diet. He's now at 5.2 or something. But the point is, all those decades of changes, he's now losing his gut retinopathy. And we're hoping that it comes back a little by little. But it's very sad that he fell through the cracks. So what I want to teach you about assessing for blood sugar imbalance is going to test it decades before. So hemoglobin A1C is one way. And then another way is looking at their insulin levels, right? Because elevated insulin probably happens the first. We probably have elevated insulin when we're little kids. And if you ever were one of those kids that had to eat all the time, who is one of those kids that if it went more than 2 hours, not many of you. I hear this a lot, like, I can't go more, and I've been like that since I was little. Probably elevated insulin, because insulin goes high, and then it goes the crash, and the blood sugar goes low. But here's what happens with those elevated insulins, right? we're getting a thickening of the wall of the vessels every time the insulin's going high. Because the body becomes resistant, right? The muscle cells going, I don't need any more sugar. Thank you very much. Not taking any today, because they become insulin resistant. But the vessel linings, the endothelial lining doesn't. And it thickens and it becomes inelastic. And then we end up with plaque formation. Or even if there's no plaque formation, you go to run after the school bus because your kid forgot their lunch. And suddenly you have a heart attack because your blood vessels are not elastic anymore and they can't expand and contract. And so these sudden heart attacks that happen, that's really what I think happened with my mom and dad. I think that they had this insulin resistance problem, and nobody detected it, and their vessels were, and then one little thing threw them over the edge, you know, one exertion or whatever. My dad came in from smoking a cigarette and dropped dead on the floor. My sister found him. It was really sad, right? So that lack of, that reduction in oxygenation of the blood at that moment, boom, done. Right? And we don't know if somebody is that close to their last breath. So why don't we get really good at testing? So hemoglobin A1C, insulin, testing fasting insulin, I think it should be between 3 and 5, the closer to 2 and 5, the closer to 2 to 3, the better. Right? Studies have shown there's a lot of good stuff. But you go to the regular lab and they say 12 is fine. 12. That's crazy. There's no sugar in my system. I'm fasting. Why do I need an insulin of 12? Insulin is what? A catabolic or anabolic? Anabolic, right? Which means it stores fat. So it basically puts the brakes on burning fat. And how many of your clients are coming in with excess weight that they have to get rid of, right? And if they have high levels of insulin all the time, it's going to be those people who say, no matter what I do, I starve myself. But I still have a problem. Their insulin levels are too high, right? And when they say they starve themselves, they mean they went on whatever the latest crazy low-cal diet was, but it's not taking out the simple carbs and the stuff that's raising it. But the point about this is, too, that you can't always predict what's going to raise somebody's sugar. And that's why I'm such a big fan of postprandial testing. Who's familiar with the term? Who's not familiar with the term postprandial testing? Just a few of you. So meaning you get a meter, and you test it after you eat. And Stefana, in my backpack, in one of the pockets in the front, is my Keto Mojo. So you're basically going to test, what does your sugar do after you eat a meal? I don't care what it is first thing in the morning. That's what the norm is for detecting diabetes. I don't care what it is first thing in the morning. What I care about is what happens after. Because it could be perfectly fine first thing in the morning, but it's shooting up way high after, and you're having a problem, right? That's what really is important. And in medicine, unfortunately, it's fasting glucose. Oh, your fasting glucose went over 120. You're suddenly diabetic. Like, suddenly? Like, the signs were there. So if you can teach people to get either the little Keto Mojo or any of the simple blood sugar testers on the market. I like the Keto Mojo because it also does ketones. And then, got it? Yeah. Thank you. And then the also now that's available more widely are the patches. Has anybody ever worn one of the new Freestyle Libres? Yeah. Is anybody wearing one now that wants to show their arm? You have one on? Oh, yeah. Well, you've got the Dexcom, right? Yeah, so it's basically, there's two different types. Because she's type 1 diabetic, she wears this more advanced one, more expensive one that does alarms. Your insurance covers it, right? Insurance won't cover it unless you're type 1 diabetic. It's unfortunate. So the Freestyle Libre is a smaller version of it, less expensive, more available to the public. It doesn't have all the fancy bells and whistles like beeping if it goes too low, because most of the people that are going to wear it are not type 1 diabetics. If you're type 1 diabetic, that's the better choice. But the Freestyle, oh yeah, thank you. That's it, thank you. So the Freestyle Libre is great because it gives you don't have to keep poking. Who teaches postprandial testing with their clients? Yeah, what's the biggest complaint? They don't want to poke so often. So with the Freestyle, you can just wear it, you pop it in, it goes for 14 days. And then it gives you a graph, and you can read it They have a reader, but now you can read it with your phone. And you go beep, and it reads it. You can go even 8 hours without reading it, and it'll show you the graph still of what happened during that eight-hour period. I still recommend doing it regularly.
The Dexcom beeps when you're high or low.
High or low. So do you set the range, or does it?
Yeah.
You set your own range.
It'll set something,
right. But if I say, I don't ever want my blood sugar above 110, I can set 110 as my upper limit, right? I set mine when I was wearing my freestyle. I set my ranges to, the lowest they let my range be is 70. And I actually like to keep my blood sugar fasting in the 60s. So I knew that whenever it went red, I was happy because I went below the bottom of theirs. And then I set it for 110 at the high. And that's a range that in all my studies and research I'm finding is super safe for most people. Because once you go above 110, and I have a couple of slides I'll show you later, but once you go above like 120, you're starting to get the peripheral nerve changes. Over 100, you're starting to get beta cell destruction, the cells in the pancreas that make the sugar. So what I'm trying to do is get people to test postprandially and get to the point where they are testing little glucose thing you stick in here. They are testing regularly, and they don't like me the first week because I have them test every 15 minutes because I don't know when their peak is going to be. So if I don't know when their peak is going to be, I'm afraid I'm going to miss it. If they test it before the meal and then 2 hours later, they most likely miss the peak. And that's what medical science and dietitians, diabetes educators are telling people 2 hours after. That's not a good thing to do, right? So it's a good idea to do it every 15 minutes. Once you get a sense of what almost always their peak is at 45. You can just tell them to test at 45. And then they determine what foods, what activities cause it to go high. What foods, what activities. So it's not just about food. Stress. I remember one day I ate a salad of lettuce, tomato, and cucumber with some avocado on it. And I always eat that. It doesn't make my sugar go up more than 5 points. All of a sudden, I tested my sugar, and it was 140. I'm like, what the? I tested again. It was 140. I tested it a third time, and that's what I do, and you teach your people to do. If they get a really oddball reading, don't just say that it's right. It could be, these are cheap machines compared to the good stuff, right? So it may be just a faulty error, and you do it again. If you do it again, and it's different, you do it a third time, and you try to see if it's all three are way different, it's a piece of crap, you got to throw it away, right? Or you call the company, and you say, I have bad strips or a bad meter, right? But that happens periodically. You just get a bad reading, and then you do it. So I said, oh, that must be wrong, and I did it again, and I did it again. And I was like, okay, what's going on? And I realized I had a stress. I was having to have a hard conversation later that day. It was scheduled for later that day with somebody that I needed to, let's just say, toe the line with. Okay. And I wasn't even externally really noticing, oh, my God, I'm scared. But my body, right, my whole sympathetic nervous system was in overdrive. And when you're in stress mode, cortisol goes up. One of cortisol's jobs is to raise the blood sugar, because why? Run, fight, or flight, right? And you need sugar in your blood. So it mobilizes usually muscle tissue, sometimes glycogen from the liver, and it gets you going, right? So when you get stressed about anything, and I've had that happen with lots of my clients after I tell them these stories, and they go, oh, yeah, I was stressed out, and it went up, right? So what do we do? What would you do if you knew that your blood sugar was high because you got stressed? Anybody? Exercise is good. Heart math, I heard. Yeah. Breathe, right? Breathing longer exhales than inhales to get yourself into parasympathetic. And that, I've seen it drop people's blood sugar like very dramatically within 20 minutes, right? Walking around the block, doing a burst, burst training. So this is important stuff, and nobody's teaching this in medical school. Allie, can you confirm that nobody teaches this in medical school? Okay. Anybody learn this in nursing school? No. Okay. This is critical stuff, so we are leading edge to know this, and this saves lives. This saves lives. So, the other issues with these high blood sugars is cancers. It elevates C-reactive protein, an inflammatory marker, and we end up with cancers as a result. And people don't even realize that they're getting cancer because they've been living with elevated blood sugar for their whole life. And it affects the brain, right? We know now, the studies in the last, decade even or so, are saying Alzheimer's is type 3 diabetes. Alzheimer's is insulin resistance of the brain. It erases parts of your memory bank, right? Fortunately, it can be reversed, right, as long as it hasn't gone on too far. So we've got to get the blood sugar under control. And if we think about, I think about what we need to do to help people, like a step. A lot of times when somebody shows up, whether it's a functional medicine practice or a chiropractic practice that's trying to do some functional medicine, or our standard medical practice, we ask about symptoms and we think about what can I do to address the symptoms. I have gas and bloating. Oh, let's give you some enzymes and probiotics, right? Or in the medical model, let's give you some drugs. And if it's a situation where my brain isn't working, let's see what's going on. Maybe you need some, are you depressed? Maybe you need some antidepressants, right? So we try to address that. Women with hot flashes, let's just give you hormones. Yeah, I tested your hormones are low. Nobody's asking the question, why? Why are your hormones low? Oh, because I'm 50. Yeah, and your hormones go lower. Why are you symptomatic as a result of your hormones going low? It's all because there's some stressors that have been happening for decades. Where else is the problem? It could be a digestive issue that causes problems with the deconjugation of estrogens as they leave, and you have buildup of these toxic estrogens. It could be that the thyroid is out of balance. It could be the stress levels, right? And the blood sugar, huge. Blood sugar. Dr. Quebec is going to talk about that later, the effect that estrogen has on the brain and insulin pickup and glucose. So we've got to look at why. Repeat, why is the most important question? 1, 2, 3. Why is the most important question? Because just because now you're in the alternative realm and you've got all these great herbs or supplements to offer people, that doesn't mean you have to stop asking why. Oh, yeah, what is the, people say to me, what herbs should I take for hot flashes? I say, why are you having them? Well, because I'm in menopause. Why are you having hot flashes in menopause, right? Is it the liver's backed up? Is it that you have maybe some genetic predisposition, COM-T, CYP1B1, you're drinking too much caffeine and it's interfering with the clearance of estrogen, and you've got the buildup of the metabolites of estrogen, and Dr. Alley's going to talk about some of that tomorrow, the metabolites of estrogen. Like, okay, why, right? What else is going on? Because if we just say, black cohosh, that's a good one. Well, black cohosh works in about this many percentage of people, depending on what's going on. Oh, Dong Quai. Well, Dong Quai works really well if it's something with somebody with dry constipation and liver stagnation. Great, okay. Why? Why do they have this, right? Is it a gut microbiome thing? We'll talk about gut microbiome tomorrow. We have to ask the question why. Make sense? Okay. So that's the assess piece, right? And the problems is it leads to, obviously, diabetes. Is an unchecked insulin resistance leads to diabetes. And people know that, but they don't know about those other things, right? The leading cause. And why? Why is blood sugar imbalance so prevalent? Well, the average person eats 150 pounds of sugar a year. And how many of you in here eat 150 pounds of sugar a year? So somebody's eating our share. This is the average. Who is that person? Some people are eating 300 pounds of it because we're not eating it, right? And my kids never ate it, and, you know, on and on. So that's why we have to help people change. And the symptoms that they notice, I talked earlier about those early symptoms, they're the tip of the iceberg for those other really bad things that are happening underneath. And we need to be aware. What? My mother had fatigue. Well, yeah, it's just your age, honey. That's why you're tired. Why did I have a skin cancer on my nose? Oh, everybody gets them. You probably were in the sun too much. Why is my gallbladder problem? My mother had gallbladder issues. Female fat, fertile, and 40. That's why. Like, she had 9 kids, and she wasn't fat, but she was female, and she was 40 when she developed. That's like, that's all the reason. Why? Why was her gallbladder giving her a hard time? Nobody asked those questions, right? Could have been her blood sugar all along. The reason I suspect, I could be wrong, I can never go back and check them, is my genes show a predominance of blood sugar imbalance genes. Genes that, and we'll see some of those tomorrow. We're going to do a genetics piece tomorrow. I don't see a lot of like the ApoE4/4. I don't have that. I have a 2/3, which is a healthy range of it. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But we don't have the bad cardio. I mean, there's some things that predispose to cardiovascular, but most of it is blood sugar. And I believe, based on my testing of myself, and looking at the belly fat rolls in my sisters, and they're all exhausted and depressed, that's our family genetics, right? And that led to them having the early heart attacks. My grandmother was 55. She had her first heart attack, and she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So early detection, this stuff you're learning this weekend. Tomorrow, Dr. Alan Hopkins is going to talk about all the advanced biomarkers that you can learn. And this is stuff you can put into practice right away. Right away. So we want to check those tip of the iceberg symptoms. So this is why, right? Blood sugar's over 100. These have been studies. There's a study at the bottom of that the beta cell destruction starts when the sugars go above 100. 100! That's not good. And then the retinal problems, right? You see these before they show up at the GP's office, because you're looking in their eyes. You're seeing changes in there. These changes happen in people when their sugars are, like most of the people having these changes, their sugars aren't above 120. They're, 110, 100 even in some of them. So we're going to see that first. Hemoglobin A1C, fasting insulin, go to the optometrist and get your eyes looked at to see what's going on in your retinas, and postprandial. Those are critical tests that everybody should do, and I believe as part of the routine blood analysis, at least once early on, hemoglobin A1C and insulin should be added, because who cares what you're in? Skip the glucose if you're trying to save money. Let's just look at those numbers, because that's more telling, right? And go get your eyes checked on a regular basis, because if you see that, one of our ERC people, she went to her eye doctor for her glasses, right? You know her. And she said, the doctor said, you better get your diabetes under control, the eye doctor said. And she said, I don't have diabetes. He goes, well, your eyes do. And she's like, what? You're crazy. My doctor, she went back to her GP, and the GP said, no, you don't have diabetes. You don't have a problem with blood sugar. Don't worry about it. The eye doctor wrote to the GP and said, she's got a problem. You better address this. Fortunately, she happened to find my program, the Sweet Spot Solution, for her husband, who did have diabetes. And she started him on it, and she started doing it with him. And she started doing the postprandial testing. And what happened? She's like, I had no idea. I had no idea. So she followed the program for a year. She lost all the weight. She was down to her normal weight. Her blood sugar is under control. She goes back to the eye doctor, and the eye doctor says, I'm so glad you got your diabetes under control. Right? That's how quickly it changes. Now, sometimes they're permanent, and Louisa knows a lot more about that than I do. You know, how do you know if it's going to be permanent changes or not? But I believe the body's very resilient. And we especially if we catch these things early. And that's why Louisa has in her office, she has, you know, she's brought in Susan to coach her people when she detects these things, and not just on diabetes, but other things. Because it's the gateway. It's the gateway where we can actually see the nervous system and the cardiovascular system. So there's a lot of dangers. I see people taking pictures. You have access to these. They're on the site, so you can just go log in, and all my slides will be there. So you have all these charts, and I don't want to go too granular right now, but there's dangers of excess insulin, right? It causes decreases the magnesium, and magnesium is important for insulin sensitivity. It causes decreases in DHEA, which opposes cortisol, and so it's like they're considered an anti-aging. It has an effect on thyroid conversion from T4 to T3. It has an effect on sex hormone binding globulin. So these people who have low estrogen or testosterone symptoms, and they go in to get tested, and the doctor says, your levels are fine. Sex hormone binding globulin, which is the protein carrier, may be elevated as a result of a diabetic or a pre-diabetic situation. So all of these things are affected. Triglycerides, inflammatory markers are affected by excess insulin. Do you think it's a good idea for us to determine if somebody's making too much insulin? Who thinks it's a good idea, right? Because it affects everything. So I think between gut and blood sugar are the things we need to address first in everybody, right? That's where the assess come in. Now, one of the things you have on the site is a set of assessments. So it's things that people can actually take. People can actually do it and get a score and determine, do they have a blood sugar issue? How's their digestion doing? It's ranked into 5 different parts of the digestive tract. There's an adrenal one. There's a thyroid one. And you're welcome to use those with your clients. You've got access to them. Print them off and give them to them or email them. And, it's got my copyright on it. I appreciate if you keep it on there. Just give me credit for it. But those are tests. You can just use them right away. You don't have to spend time. You can then decide you're going to make your own and add some other questions. Take away some of mine. That's fine. You go in and make your own. But you can use this right away when you get out of here. And I highly recommend you do, at least on your family members, to start. Get comfortable reading the results of those. So there's some assessments. I talked about most of these, but C-reactive protein is important to know if there's some issues going on, the levels of cholesterol. All of these are very important, you know. But the only one that's done conventionally to determine if there's a blood sugar is what? The one in the upper left-hand corner, fasting glucose. We need to be looking at all the C-peptides, another one which gives us an idea of pancreatic function. Don't necessarily run that on everybody. I'll run it on people I'm suspicious. Are they going from type 2? Are they going into pancreatic burnout? Is the pancreas still producing? So these are tests, right? Make sure that these are in your arsenal. If you live in New York, as a health coach, it's really hard to run a lot of these tests because New York is... There are pains about not being able to run things. There's direct access labs, and then your lab work, who Dr. Hopkins represents, he's going to talk tomorrow, that you can direct access in almost all states. So if you're a health coach and you can't order tests, you can do this. If you're out of the country, I have no idea what your state and country laws are for dictating that. But it's really important to be able to run these things. And that's the Keto Mojo. The Keto Mojo on one side and then the Freestyle on the other. The Keto Mojo has both ketones and blood sugar. I mostly use mine for my ketones. And we'll talk more about ketones. I always talk about ketosis later. I think after Mike's going to touch on it in his talk, and then I'm going to talk about it in more detail Sunday, yeah. Okay. Measure. There's good ones in our, if you're an insulin resistance practitioner or if you're an NEPT, you have the access to a comparison chart that I did. You guys, my fingers were really messy after doing that comparison chart because I got like 12 or more meters and I was sitting down. Every time I tested each meter. And then I did these five tests in 5 minutes on each one of those just to see if they were accurate between them. I spent a lot of money, but I also like, oh my gosh. So that chart is priceless. It's priceless, seriously. If I had to sell it, I'd just include it in the programs, but if I had to sell that, it'd be like $500 at least. I mean, that's what it cost me in meters and time and agony, but I tested them, and some of them I literally just threw in the trash. I said, it was up, it was down, it was all over. Some of them were, there was one that I found was really accurate compared to, and a couple of my clients had compared it to the fasting glucose at the lab. And that was what I used, and they stopped making it. It was called the True to Go and the True Results. They stopped making it because there was the way the reagent worked. If somebody was on insulin and on this other medication that interfered with the reading, they could get a false high, take too much insulin, and then go into diabetic coma. So because of the one or two people that applied to, instead of putting a warning, do not use this meter if you're on insulin. Do not use this meter if you're on insulin. Done, right? They took it off the market for all of us, and it was the best meter going. So I compared everything to that, and I have a chart in comparison. So we talked, that's assessment for now. We're going to hit more on assessment tomorrow. We're going to hit more on assessment on Sunday in different aspects because it's so, so important. I just wanted to share with you from the blood glucose because a lot of people were asking me about it. Are we going to talk about assessing for blood glucose? The next piece is connection. And we talked about this. Ocean hit on it. I hit on it. Trisha's probably going to hit on it. And tomorrow, Laura and Kimberly are going to hit on it. Connection is super, super critical, right? If you know how to connect with a person where you get who they are, where they're at, that's a huge part of the healing. So we've got to spend that time connecting with them, even if it's as little as reading their thing and like, wow, I just feel for you. You've been horseback riding for the last 20 years, and now you can't do it because, you know, of these ankle problems that you're having, or whatever it is, your energy levels. How can we help you get supported in that? I'd love to support you in increasing your energy levels and helping you with pain and inflammation. So letting them know that you care is super important, okay? Big why is one of my big things. We talked about that this morning. Do that with your clients. Ask them why. Why do they want to get over their arthritis? Why do they want to get their energy back? Why do they want to get their sex hormones balanced? And then keep bringing them back to that when they say, oh, but that croissant was just so appealing, I couldn't miss it, right? And you get them to the point where it becomes easy to make the choices because they're focused on what they really want. So the first one was assess. The second one was what? And the third one was plan. This is related to the disorganization that happens in their brain when they have early traumas, early childhood traumas, right? And that's one of the things we're assessing for, but also one of the things you're going to be connecting on, because those don't always come out. And there's a, I'll go back to assessment. There's a little questionnaire you can give them. It's a 10 question quiz called the ACEs quiz. Who's heard of that? Who's never heard of the ACEs? Okay, it's a significant number of you. There's a lot of research over the years, adverse childhood experiences, and the effect of traumas of all kinds, emotional traumas, physical traumas, relationship traumas, toxic traumas, toxic exposure traumas that happen early on in childhood that shape your health later on. And there's huge population group studies on this to see what the relationship was. They came up with about 10 questions. You can test and you can read all the research on it, but one of the books I highly recommend for this is Childhood Disrupted. The stories in there are just so telling. And identifying what went on there, and we're gonna address that this weekend, the effects of the vagus nerve. We're going to talk about trauma. We're going to talk about these pieces because I think it's very much overlooked by a lot of practitioners. And you know why? It is very delicate, right? So you give them this questionnaire, and you're finding out they were raped, they were, you know, this, their mother was murdered, their mother, you know, they don't always want to talk about that. And one of the questions I found very helpful for me when I'm first meeting with somebody and I read their questionnaire, their answers, I'll say, is there anything on here that you didn't share with me that might be important for me to know with relation to your health? I'll say that again. Is there anything that you haven't told me yet on this questionnaire that I didn't cover and ask you that might be important? And some people, you can actually learn to read their energy, right? And you'll see, right, if they stop breathing. So I did this once with someone, and she just went, and I was like, oh God, what's coming? Breathe. It's uncomfortable for us as practitioners too, because we're in the middle of this emotional thing and you may not know how to handle it. And she said, I've never told this to anyone before. And then she proceeded to tell me her story. And it was like, oh my God, but it was a release for her. It was a big release for her, and we worked it around to the point of getting her to have something she could do to take care of herself with that and let that go, but it affected her, and I don't want to talk about her health, you know, her specifics because I don't want, you know, it's confidentiality, but very much affected the way her health manifested over the years, very much did, and now she's committed to not letting that affect her anymore. So don't be afraid to ask those questions. The ACEs gives you a way to ask, get that information out in a, you know, not in the language, because sometimes when we're talking about it, it's hard, but it's on paper. And then you can have an evaluation with them on that. Who's used the ACEs in your practice? Yeah. Very valuable, isn't it? It simplifies it, right? And then they're open to it. And I think every doctor needs to be using that in their practice, and every practitioner. Super important. So what was our next one? Plan, right? So the lifestyle plan. Ocean talked a lot about food, and food is so important. And, you know, moving them in the direction of a whole foods, plant-based diet. Whole foods first, right? Let's get rid of the processed stuff. Plant-based as much as possible. Doesn't mean they have to go completely vegan or vegetarian, but we want to move in that direction for the sustainability of the planet and for the health of the body. The brassicas are majorly important for hormone balance, right? The greens are loaded with nutrients and minerals. But here's the thing. Not everybody's body is going to tolerate all the good foods that they actually need because of some old stuff, because of maybe leaky gut, because of maybe some microbes that are living in them. So we have to stay away from diet dogma. Because when we say, oh yeah, I'm going to put everybody on a, you know, green smoothie in the morning with chia porridge, and then we're going to have a salad for lunch, and then, you know, not everybody can tolerate it, right? Because of the way their body is right now. So we have to go in there and really look at it. And that's where learning evaluation is important. Okay, so we'll go through more of this. We have a lot more of this on Sunday, but throughout the weekend. But the plan is important. And don't just think, oh, well, they need bioidentical hormones. Here you go. What's the rest of their plan, right? And the plan has to be laid out for them in a way that makes it doable. Do we want to make this great plan? Okay, I'll tell you what I used to do. New in practice. Oh, wow, this person has this, this, and this, and I'd make like a three-page plan. I'm very good at plans. Made this three-page plan. Take this, eat this, avoid this, drink this, move that. And they'd go, oh, thank you. And they'd walk away, and I wouldn't see them again. So I'd think, what did I do wrong? I gave them this comprehensive plan. Bite-sized pieces. Bite-sized pieces. You can give them a vision of where it's going. You can say, I can see that there's some areas over here that need to be changed. There's some habits here. There's some foods here. And where do you feel most comfortable starting? What's something we can start with right now that's going to make you successful? Right? And it may not be where you want them to start because it may not be as, you know, profound. But when you get them to do the bite-sized pieces, they will do it. So it's really important that we don't overwhelm them with the plan. And a lot of you in here are like me. You know, you're in your head and you're like, I see this and I see that and you're good at that. But the plan is overwhelming. So as important as food is, absence of food can be just as valuable to the healing process. Fasting. Who's not heard of fasting as a therapeutic tool these days, right? When I came out, my first foray into natural healing was a fast. I did a 28-day water fast. And it changed my life. But I didn't tell anybody about it. Well, I told my family members and they thought I was nuts and they kept sending me books on anorexia and, you know, thinking I had an eating disorder. So I stopped talking about it because people thought it was nutty. Now, I'm proud of it. You say, wow, I've only done 5 days. Oh, the longest I ever did was 12 days. I only do 16 hours every day. Great. They've heard of intermittent fasting, which we started talking about back in, who did our very first, where's Nancy Scott? Very first Before Be Gone program, right? We talked about intermittent fasting back then, right? Nobody ever heard of it back then, right? Except a few pioneers. Now it's like, oh, do you do intermittent fasting? I do. How many hours do you go, right? So it's like chic now, right? But fasting is a very good therapeutic tool to use. Not necessarily a 28-day water fast right out of the gate, or even a 5-day water fast. But skipping, for some people, it's just going 12 hours from one meal to, from dinner to the breakfast. I mean, people say, oh, I intermittent fast, I go 12 hours. I'm like, that's like normal recommended eating that everybody should do, right? You finish dinner and you don't eat till breakfast, right? Okay, you intermittent fast. Let's just move it up to more if you want to do it. So there's intermittent fasting, there's long-term fasting, there's short fasting, and there's even a concept of eating while fasting. Fasting mimicking. There was a doctor, Walter Longo, wrote a book on, and he talked about fasting mimicking diets. We're going to be putting together, his is not actually a diet per se with real food, it's a kit that you buy. We're going to be doing a challenge come, and we'll let you guys all know, come, I don't know what month, but in the fall, we're calling it Eat While Fasting. So you get to actually eat, but mimic the effects based on his research of macronutrients, micronutrients, calories, etc. We're going to mimic that and see what kind of results people get. I've tried it on myself and it works really well. And I've done a lot of fasting. Then we have intermittent fasting every other day. And Mike's going to go into the depths of this and some of the autophagy that happens during that, that deep cleansing. He's going to really go into the science on that. So, and then we have ketogenic diets. Can incorporate that into their plan? Maybe, but maybe not. There's some considerations, right? Sometimes you have to be careful with women, right? Because it can cause them to go into anovulation, and we have to be really careful with it. So it's not for everybody, but here's the thing. Ketogenic diets get a bad rap in the plant-based community, right? Oh, ketogenics, you're going to die. But what if you could do a plant-based ketogenic diet? Anybody interested? Who here does a ketogenic diet that's plant-based? You guys, yeah, you can. It can be a plant-based ketogenic diet. You get the benefits of the ketones because it helps with the brain and it helps to keep, you know, the insulin levels low and all that. and the benefits of micronutrients and antioxidants from the plants, right? And with the standard ketogenic diet, it's so high in animal fat and oil. Okay, guys, oil is not a health food. Let's repeat that. Oil is not a health food. Olive oil, coconut oil, pouring it in on things. You can use it as a little drizzle on things for flavor, but it's not a whole food, right? So a whole food plant-based diet is not going to include white bread. It's not going to include crackers made with white flour. It's not going to include oil or much in the way of oil, right? But whole food plant-based fats, holy cow. We had a lot of that at our meal today. We had the macadamia. Who liked that cheese thing? That was so amazing. That looked like feta cheese. Oh my God, that was so good. Olives. We don't need olive oil, and we can have olives. Whole olives have more nutrition. So we focus on that. I'm not saying we have to go 100% and I'll never eat oil, and you'll never eat out again if you never eat oil. But, you know, yeah, you go within that range, but don't have people think that it's good for them. We have to teach the body to burn fat as fuel. And we were having that discussion the other day, right? When you're type 1 diabetic, when her blood sugar goes too low, she's like, well, 20 is on the low side. But if she hits 40, if I hit 40 and I'm doing a fast, I hit 40 all the time in my blood sugar. And people think, oh my God, you're going to die. No, I go for a run because I have my ketones going up. So the level of ketones, an ideal level of ketones for mild nutritional ketosis is 0.5 to 1.5. Then you get into a more therapeutic ketosis is 1.5 to 3. And then over 3 is really, I think, almost impossible to do unless you're fasting. But if you're in a situation where your blood glucose dips too low because you took insulin, right? This is an artificial situation. Took too much insulin, it goes too low. She's not going to have the ketones up as a result. Not keto adapted, so you have to be keto adapted in order for your body to kick in and use ketones for fuel, and then you don't care if your blood sugar is 40, right? I'm not saying go out and, you know, just get your blood sugar down to 40 and tell people to get their blood sugar down to 40. It's individualized, but don't freak out if their blood sugar goes to 40 and their ketones are 6. They're fine. They're burning fat as fuel, right? So I think I'm a little scared about the way the ketogenic diet has been promoted these days, like everybody's doing it for weight loss, and they're not looking at the long-term effects. You know, drinking olive oil and eating bacon and eating lard and drinking lard all day long, that is not good. And they don't do much in the way of vegetables because they think it's too much carb. I've had as much as 150 grams of carb a day and stayed in ketosis because it was vegetables, lots of vegetables with lots of fiber, right? And everybody's going to be different. Some people have to be in a different range. Is ketosis for everybody? No, I think the jury's out on that. But is it a useful therapeutic tool when given in the right situation? Absolutely, because it helps with blood sugar, with insulin, with memory, with gut inflammation, with appetite control, with energy, with growth hormone, detoxification, and autophagy. And Mike's going to get into good discussion after we finish here. And then Steph's going to talk about the effects of ketogenic diets on the microbiome and what you can do to keep your microbiome healthy if you do want to be doing ketogenics, whether it's plant-based. I don't recommend if it's not plant-based, but or high plant. So the fast way to get into ketosis is to fast. So if you do want to kickstart, if you are thinking ketosis or you have a client who's thinking of it and they're not adverse to doing fasting, you can get into ketosis really quickly with fasting. By day 3, you're in pretty decent ketosis. And the level of autophagy, which Mike will talk about, it gets maximized at around day 3. So you can fast, like do a 3-day fast or a 5-day fast before, and then you get into ketosis, and then it's easier to stay there. But if you're just doing it with the food, it might take a couple of weeks for some people to actually get there. That's important to know. Look at all the ways that it helps the brain, right? I mean, people are going on antidepressants, they're losing their memory, they can't focus, they're being put on Ritalin and all this stuff. But going into ketosis is actually supports the brain, right? Now, you're going to see if you ever read Michael Greger's site, he's great, nutritionfacts.org, but he has a bias against ketosis because he hasn't explored using it in a way that's high in plants. right? There's some out there, like the ones that work with Esselstein and Ornish, and they have a very low-fat approach. And that's super important for certain genetic types. If you have an APOE4-4 person or APOE3-4, those people are going to dramatically improve on the Esselstein type of diet. And it doesn't matter if their skin gets dry because they're alive, right? But without the good fats in the diet, a lot of times we end up with dry skin, we end up with hormone imbalances. So how do we find that beautiful dance that we can do with people so that we can customize it? And that's what I'm hoping to get through this weekend. Is that something everybody wants, to be able to sort through this stuff and understand it enough to be able to make decisions for each person? Okay? And the dark side of keto, we've already talked about, right? We're going to talk about genetics tomorrow afternoon, I think it is. So I'm going to go into the genes related to these specific metabolic disorders. So we'll get into that. But really, when you realistically look at it, minor changes in us, between us, make huge changes in how we manifest. So we have genes that affect how we look, our height, our weight, our eye color, etc. And we have genes that affect our metabolic pathways. But when you think about how those minor little changes can affect you, think about that these guys are 93% the same as us. They don't look too much the same, except they have arms and legs and heads and, you know what I mean? They look a lot different. These guys, are 98.5%, right? And then all of us, there's only a 0.5% difference in us genetically. Look at the difference, and every single one of us look different. Brothers and sisters look very different, and they're more than 98.5% the same. Those minor differences make a huge difference this way, but it also makes a huge difference inside. So what kind of foods should they be eating? What kind of micronutrients are they at risk for developing deficiencies of? And when we understand that, we can help to customize that. We did a whole SHINE conference last year on genetics, 3 days straight. Who was here? A lot of you, right? So you got a lot. Do you feel like you've mastered genetics by now? No. Why? Because it's an emerging science. It's always something new. I am constantly learning. I'm constantly taking new seminars. I'm constantly digging in to figure this out. But I think we have enough right now to be able to understand, like, this person might need more zinc and they may need it for the rest of their life. This person needs to be really careful with the saturated fat. This person needs to watch the caffeine, whereas this person maybe not so. Like, caffeine can increase your risk of breast cancer if you have certain SNPs, CYP1B1, right? You've got to be careful, because the same pathway is going to detoxify caffeine, and it's not going to detoxify the 4-hydroxyestrogens, which you'll hear a little bit about tomorrow. And on Sunday, I'm going to go through a Dutch test. Who's ever done Dutch tests? Who would be interested in seeing an analysis of a Dutch test? Anybody? We'll do some of that on Sunday. Then we have the single nucleotide polymorphisms. That's those changes between us. And then we have the obstacles, right? So we went through the plan, right? And the genetics have to factor into the plan and how we're going to put that plan together. And then we have the obstacles. There's a lot of them in most people's lives, right? If they're eating 150 or more pounds of sugar a year, there's some major obstacles there, right, to them healing. So I put together this model. I call it the Body Freedom Foundations. And I personally feel like my health gives me the freedom to live my life on my terms, my good health. If I had poor health, I would lose the freedom to do what I want when I want to do, right? Too tired, too achy, whatever, in bed. So I believe freedom, for me, that's a huge value. It's one of my top values, is freedom, the ability to do what we want to do. And so many people have lost their freedom, right, due to health challenges, due to imbalances in their body. So I played with the acronym, these pillars, and I renamed my pillars. So fun is the first one. And you know what? If you're working with somebody and they're resistant to change, maybe just telling them to have fun for 5 minutes a day is an easy yes. What do you like to do? What's fun for you? There's where the connection piece. What's fun for you? Oh, that's fun for you? Okay, I want you to just take 5 minutes a day. We did this as a group in our ERC program, our Energy Recharge Inner Circle, last year. And we got together on a call, and everybody committed to what they were going to do, and they posted in the Facebook group. And it was so fun. look what I knitted. Look at the Legos I created. And they would just post. Wasn't that fun? You were in that one. You were in that group, right? Janet? It was so fun to see what they were posting. And it was just so empowering. So fun. Like, really focus on that. Rest and restful sleep. Super important, right? We have to have that. And there's a great book, Why We Sleep. If you're having trouble like I was, getting myself into bed thinking, sleep is important for those people, but not for me. Then I started reading it. I'm like, oh, maybe I should sleep too. Okay. Exercise, movement, right? Keeping the body moving, but find the fun things for them. That's where the connection comes in. What do you love to do? And you try to get them moving. One of my friends, she loved to dance. I went, okay, put on music every day and just go in your living room and dance. You don't have to go to the gym. You don't have to go to the aerobics class. You don't have to run. She's like, really? So that's what she started doing, right? Find the fun things that they want to do. The environment's super important. I know that Lynn over here has been studying that a lot. It's super important, the EMFs in the environment, the toxins in the environment. We need to have them in a clean environment and mold. So don't be afraid to dig into the questions. And I'm going to show you how you have access to a questionnaire that I put together to get at where the obstacles lie for this person. And then, of course, we have diet. It's a big one with 150 pounds of sugar in most people's diets, right? So we look at what their diet is and what's the obstacles in their diet. Congratulate them for the good stuff. I always ask them, what's the top three things you do for your health? And what's the top? And it's very telling, because if they say, what's the three most healthy foods you eat in a week? And they say, whole wheat toast, eggs, and organic butter. I'm like, what are the worst things you eat? You know, Cheetos and... Okay, but the best ones tell me a lot because it tells me what their orientation is, right? That what they're thinking, right? If somebody says green leafy vegetables and olives and coconut yogurt, then I'm like, this person's educated, right? I know where I'm starting from, and I know that, you know, I'm going to have to dig to find where these things are, where these problems are. But the one with the whole wheat toast and scrambled eggs and whatever, butter, that's what they think is healthy. I think they're not eating greens because they would have put it down, right? If they were eating vegetables, they would have written it down, but they're not. So that's where we know where we have to work. And then, of course, outlook. And that's where I look at the big why and what they're, are they a positive outlook? Where you're going to get a lot of the negative Nellies in your practice. Who has some negative Nellies? Oh, I tried that. Nope, I don't think I can do that. Nope, 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 no way. My family won't go for that. Nope, 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 don't have time, right? So we have to be able to help them to shift the outlook and the attitude, because it makes a huge difference. And then finally, mindfulness, right? Having those practices, whether it's yoga, meditation, heart math, whatever it is for them. And how are you guys keeping track of my time? Am I okay? Nobody? We have 5 minutes? 5 minutes? Oh, it's up there? 3 minutes? 3 minutes? Okay, good. We're at the end. So I laid this out, and this is something you can do. If you're welcome to, you know, copy something like this. It took me 5 minutes to make that little graphic in PowerPoint because I just did smart art, and I did it, and I added the things, and it made the thing for it, and I colored the boxes. So you can make that and have people, like, put their score from this, which you have on your site. And you have them do this questionnaire, and you get scores for each of the areas. And you go, oh, wow, they're fun. Fun is so interesting, because we did a Spring Into Vitality conference a few years back with people, and I had them all fill this out before they came. And then we put a list up on the clipboard to say who was, what the highest one. And I'm thinking diet's going to be one, exercise's going to be one. The one that ranked the lowest for the most number of people was fun. You were there, right? And I'm like, what? Guys, it's fun. It's fun. Let's just get, you can switch this around right now. The diet's hard to change, right? Exercising regularly is hard to change, but find 5 minutes to have fun, right? So you get a sense of it, and then you can draw it on this little thing if you want. And then we'll talk more as we go through the weekend. That top, that's the pillars that hold up the body. And if we think about the body as having all these systems, you know, at the base that's important to address is the digestion and then the blood sugar and then adrenals, thyroid, and then all the rest, the other sex hormones and the organs. But instead, we're jumping in and going, oh, you have this skin thing. Let's address your skin. Here's some cortisone to put on it. Or no, let's put calendula on it because we're natural practitioners, right? Why do they have the skin problem? Most likely in their gut. food allergy, gut-related, blood sugar, et cetera. So we have to go deeper, right? Symptomatic care is not, it's not prohibited, okay? It's a good idea to get people out of pain and symptoms, but when you explain to them, I'm giving you a Band-Aid right now because you're in a lot of pain and discomfort, but then we're going to work on the root cause so this doesn't come back and this doesn't come back in another place, right? Like the house burning down, you take away the battery and the house burns down. You take away the symptoms and there's still a fire going on somewhere else. So that's that. And the next last piece is the reassessment. The reassessment's super important because you got to know how's your plan working. You know, you're human, they're human. You make a plan, it may not be the right plan. You may have to tweak it and adjust it. Who's ever made a plan for somebody and it was perfect, they were perfect, they left, they did it, and happily ever after? No, right? But who has had an appointment with somebody who said they went to a naturopath or they went to a somebody and they did this testing and they're on these all these supplements and you're going, how come you're on all these adrenal adaptogens? Oh, I went to the naturopath 3 years ago and they did this test where I had to spit. Do you ever hear that test? I'm like, yeah, I've heard of that test. You had to spit. And then they told me that my adrenals were fatigued and so they gave me these. I'm like, oh, that's great. How long did you take it before they retested? Oh, no, that was 3 years ago. Like, so you didn't go back and retest to see if what they put you on was working? No. And you're still taking it? So I get two of them. They're either still taking it 3 years later, or they took it for 3 months, and then they stopped, figuring they were cured. Right? Because it's the this or that mentality. That's what they've been taught. Right? You take this, it goes away, and then you're done when it's not. So the reassessment then sets us back up for a new plan and a new, you know, obstacles that are getting in the way. Why didn't it work?